the whole system is based on that notion that man is fallen and needs to be restrained from himself.
Welcome to the Know Why podcast. I'm your host, Liberty McCarter. For many of us, it's not enough to know what people say about life's most important questions. We also want to know why. Each week, Know Why tackles tough questions on topics ranging from spirituality to current events. While we approach these issues from a Christian perspective, we discuss diverse opinions and ultimately dive into what the research says. Are you ready to know why? Let's get started. Hey, Know Why listeners, here's part two of our interview with Richard Lim. You know, I think this goes back to the idea of federalism. And so you touched a little bit on, you know, the compromise that was made during the Constitutional Convention of having the House of Representatives and the Senate in U.S. Congress. But can you just explain, you know, what is federalism? Why does it matter? People may have heard about it a little bit in college or in high school or had to read a Federalist paper or two, or maybe they didn't. So can you just talk about what that system means?
Absolutely. So federalism, it sounds like one of those complicated political science-y terms that puts kids to sleep. But here's the thing. Federalism is absolutely essential because all it is a division of responsibility. The federal government has certain responsibilities, let's say national defense, national trade policy, those kind of things. And the states have certain responsibilities that the federal government doesn't have. And the local governments have certain responsibilities that none of the other layers have. And the reason this is the case is it's the same principle of checks and balances. So from a horizontal perspective, the federal government has checks and balances. We all learned this in Government 101, right? You know, the president has certain powers and can check the Congress, and the Congress can check the president, and the Supreme Court checks all of them, but all of them check, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And the reason why that exists is because if you divide up power, you split up power, you make it more difficult for any one entity to get too much power. So the whole point of federalism is freedom, because the way you get freedom is you divide up power so no one gets too much power. And so checks and balances is dividing up freedom at a horizontal level, right? You know, within one layer of government, within the federal government, and states usually have, you know, they should have checks and balances. You know, the state legislature checks the governor and vice versa. And then it's the same thing at the local level. The mayors usually check the city council. And now federalism is just a vertical division of power. You know, you're saying that the states check the federal government. The federal government checks the states. The locales, you know, check everyone else, et cetera, et cetera. And so that's really all federalism is. It's a division of power to protect freedom. That's all it is. Now, with that said, we have a built-in system of federalism because the Constitution actually delegates to the states the power of holding elections. So even national elections are run by the states. So when you go vote, you're getting, and a lot of people are getting vote mail-in ballots and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It comes from their state that is deciding this. You know, even when you're voting for the president, it's the states that run it. And what happens essentially is that every presidential election is actually 51 separate elections held by the states. So, it's every state voting for president and D.C. So it's actually, you know, divided up. And yeah, that's all part of this policy. That's all part of this notion that we don't want the national government handling everything. If the national government can handle running elections, that makes it more likely that someone at the national government is going to do a power grab and try to control the terms of the election. Mm-hmm. This way, at least individual states are able to check the power of the federal government by running the elections that determines who gets to serve in the federal government. So that's why this whole system exists. It's all part and parcel of a system to protect freedom. But unfortunately, the voters have often chosen people that want to centralize everything in Washington, D.C. And as a result, federalism gets undermined. So I would just like to say to people who say the system isn't working, well, as the founders would say, the system is only as good as the people that run it. And if the people don't understand what federalism is or even the point of it, of course federalism is going to be undermined because they're not even voting with the intent to preserve federalism. And unfortunately, we have a party that wants to centralize everything in Washington, D.C., the Democratic Party. And that's why we have this problem right now, is that federalism is being undermined and the national government is taking on responsibilities that were never intended to be under the purview of the national government, and for good reason.
Yeah. Yeah. So much good information. You're just giving us a primer in U.S. history, in government, in voting, and why it matters and why it counts. So this has been great. But before we wrap up, I wanted to ask, just kind of shift to the presidential election and ask a couple of questions with your awesome historical perspective. Is there anything in this upcoming presidential election that is unique or unprecedented that you think is worth noting?
Oh, yes. Donald Trump is an unprecedented figure in American history, so that alone. So I would say that you have a relatively unique situation where you have two presidents that, well, first of all, it's two ex-presidents. It doesn't happen too often.
Right.
It happens. 1892, when Grover Cleveland challenged Benjamin Harrison, and Grover Cleveland was a previous president, so it's a similar situation. Donald Trump is the analog to Grover Cleveland, and Benjamin Harrison is the analog to Joe Biden. So you have that. Donald Trump is basically, even though he's not technically an incumbent president, he basically is. If you look at his numbers winning in the primaries, he has basically been an incumbent. So you have two more or less incumbent people running for president. You have the two oldest presidents of all time running against each other, which makes the vice presidential pick that much more important. Whoever is vice president for the next 4 years is the immediate front runner to be the front runner for the next president. I think that all of those aspects make it uniquely unprecedented. But at the same time, I would say that the divisiveness of the country, I think statistically what we're finding is that the country is so polarized. People have identified more conservative and more liberal than ever before. And so in a sense, that is unique, but it's not completely unique. As any good historical enthusiasts would say, the Civil War was arguably the most divided we ever were. The country
literally
split up. So the divisiveness is not absolutely unique, but it is still unique in, I would say, in modern times. If you compare the debates that were happening in 2000 or let's say 1996, I like to laugh about this with a friend, because in 2000, the federal treasury was running a surplus. We were actually taking more in tax dollars than we were spending. We still had a big debt, but nonetheless, for 1 year, we had a surplus. And one of the debates during that year, that presidential election between Bush and Gore, is, oh, man, we have so much money in the treasury. What do we do about
wow.
it? One guy said we should, give it back in taxes, and the other guy said we should spend it in, Social Security. But to think how good we had it at the time, where that was one of our problems, as opposed to now, where both parties see each other as an existential threat to the Republic, that's the level of division that we have now. So I would say that makes it unique in relatively recent terms.
Yeah. Wow. So interesting again. And, to think about our history and there's the saying goes, there's nothing new under the sun. Maybe we should say there's almost nothing new there's under the sun. But just kind of on the flip side, is there anything about this current election or kind of, the recent few years of presidential politics that you've heard people talk about as if it is unprecedented and it's actually not?
Well, I would say, first, what you said about nothing new under the sun. One of my favorite quotes is that history you know, people say history repeats itself, but actually history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes, meaning it's similar, but it's still a little different. So I think that's kind of that's why history is a guide, but it's not like, it doesn't give you, clear cut answers. But as far as what's not unprecedented, I think, you know, again, going back to the divisiveness, I mean, we are divided more than we've been in a long time, but we've been divided before, and I think anyone who's lived through, let's say the Vietnam War or Watergate will say, yeah, you know, things are rough now and maybe even rougher, but let's not pretend that things were great in the 1960s and 70s, or as I said, in the 1860s. So if you look at what people said, people forget, you know, a guy like George Washington is so revered. He's on our coinage and memorials. But when he was president, there were people that trashed him, called him a traitor, said that he was a British spy, it's insane things. When we had the election to replace him between Adams and Jefferson, people were calling Jefferson a hermaphrodite and John Adams was they were saying all sorts of horrible things about him. And we had anyone who knows the musical Hamilton, the sitting vice president Aaron Burr was in a duel with the former Secretary of Treasury, yes, Alexander Hamilton, and shot and killed the man. So if you want to talk about divisiveness, you know, politics has divided Americans right from the start. You know, it's always been ugly. It's human nature, you know, and human nature from the Christian worldview is fixed. And so as great as the founding fathers were, they were also human, and they engaged in a lot of nasty stuff too. And every generation is engaged in a lot of nasty stuff. And I personally revere the founders. But they were human, and they gave us this amazing system, but we've always fought tooth and nail for our beliefs, you know? And I think there's this perception that, oh, because things are so crazy now, it hasn't, you know, the things in the past were so much more tranquil. Well, maybe they weren't as nasty, or maybe they were, but the fact of the matter is that they definitely weren't tranquil. You know, the 90s look relatively quaint now because we're not dealing with the same things, and you know, the Democratic Party was a lot more moderate back then. But if you look at what people were saying at the time, people were pretty angry at each other, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, top conservatives did not like Bill Clinton, you know? And the Democrats did not like Newt Gingrich. I mean, there was a lot of hatred then, too. And people then were saying, oh, boy, this is the worst it could be. And, you know, boy, were they wrong. So I would say that the divisiveness is there's some truth that it hasn't been as bad, or this is the worst it's been, but at the same time, it's not true, because it has been worse at times. So
yeah, great perspective. And I really like how you brought it back to human nature. And, you know, no generation is perfect. No political figure is perfect. The last time you were on, Richard, we talked about the right way to look at, you know, problematic historical figures. And you said something during that podcast that I thought was so good, is that in a way we're all problematic because none of us are perfect. So there's always going to be, and I think it, you know, as you know, from studying US history and presidents, people tend to look at former presidents with a lot kinder eyes and maybe softer memories after they leave office than when they're in. But yeah, there's no perfect time period or person. And I think your system. Yeah, that's so true. But it makes me grateful for the system we do have and the things we've been talking about, like the Electoral College and federalism, personally for me, because it's like, well, since everybody is so messed up to an extent, I'm really glad that none of those people can just grab all the power, or that, you know, there's not one, you know, arm or branch of the government that can override the others, because we do have the system that we have. And so that's part of why it is important. And as flawed as the founders were, I think you would agree, Richard, that they acknowledged that we were flawed and we are imperfect, and that they knew we needed that system of checks and balances.
The whole system is based on that notion that man is fallen and needs to be restrained from himself. You know, there's that famous quote by James Madison that if men were angels, no government would be necessary. And I actually don't totally agree with that, because I think that, you know, you still do need a form of order and government. There's a reason why God has government and governs. But nonetheless, in a fallen world, government becomes that much more important. You know, it becomes that much more important to restrain evil and sin. Mm-hmm. And that's what our whole life is based on.
Yeah. So good. So, Richard, what resources do you recommend? We've talked about, you know, the Electoral College. We've talked about what federalism means and just, you know, history in general. Obviously, your podcast is a great resource, but is there anything else you recommend for people who want to dive in and learn more about this, especially as we're in a presidential election year?
Yeah. I would have to say that, there's a scholar named Tara Ross, Ross, R-O-S-S. And she's one of the absolute foremost experts on the Electoral College. She's one of its staunchest defenders. And there is an effort right now to undermine it. They actually have I forgot the name of it, but basically it's this initiative where they're getting a whole bunch of states, instead of amending the Constitution, they're trying to get states to agree to give all their Electoral College votes to the winner of the popular vote. And she's one of the foremost advocates of the Electoral College, and she's fighting this attempt to subvert the Constitution. So Tara Ross has a lot of great resources. She's written books on the subject. She also has a great 5-minute video on PragerU's website that talks about the Electoral College, which is, it's just outstanding. So I would say go to her. She's really, she could tell you way more about it than I could.
Okay, great. Well, we will definitely link those resources on the website, knowwhypodcast.com. Thank you again, Richard, for joining the Know Why podcast. It's been a great conversation and so educational.
Always a pleasure. And just thank you for the opportunity to talk about this very important institution.
Thank you so much for listening to this conversation today. Hopefully, it's given you something to think about and helped you understand the why behind your beliefs a little bit better. Don't forget, if you want to find any resources that we mentioned here today or contact us with questions and ideas, visit knowwhypodcast.com.